Well, welcome to this class. You know, at music at Teachers Institute, we look a lot of different directions, and that's very challenging and stretching and expanding, but now we're sort of funneling that all back down, narrowing it down, and just looking at ourselves and what are we. Paul told Timothy, he said, "Be thou an example of the believers." And so when you stand up in front of your students and they see your eyes and your face, they see what you're wearing, they see your shoes, they see the patches in your pants or your shirt or the strings out of your dress or what, they see everything. I can remember studying, my high school teacher was bent over helping a fellow student. I can just remember studying the back of his pants. You know, your students pick up an amazing amount of things about you that go way beyond your words. And so that's what we're here to talk about. I was just impressed with that poem Indwelled that Brother Martin read. One of the phrases went like this: "Till I lose sight of you and see Christ instead." And that is what this is all about. Being a good example is not seeing you, it's seeing Christ in you. So, I want to read the words of a song that go right along with that. It goes like this: "Not I, but Christ be honored, loved, exalted. Not I, but Christ be seen, be known, be heard. Not I, but Christ in every look and action. Not I, but Christ in every thought and word. Not I, but Christ in lowly, silent labor. Not I, but Christ in humble, earnest toil. Christ, only Christ, no show, no ostentation. Christ, none but Christ, the gatherer of the spoil. Christ, only Christ, no idle word ere falling. Christ, only Christ, no needless bustling sound. Christ, only Christ, no self-important bearing. Christ, only Christ, no trace of I be found." That should be your goal, for Christ to shine through you. So some memories I have of people who were examples in my life. I thought of my parents, first of all. Dad. Dad, in many ways, as a boy especially, was my hero, and he still is. Some of the things I remember specifically where he stood for what he believed. And he didn't believe everything perfectly, but when I looked on as a young man and saw him stand in spite of the winds of and pressures from other people, when I saw him stand, that did something in my young man's heart. Another thing I remember about Dad is how he loved Mom just in front of us all. And I, thinking about that now and being recently married, there are so many times that I think about Dad in the way that I relate to my wife. And I'm just, the power of example here. These were things he taught by doing. Another thing I remember him about, he was not afraid to get dirty. And I remember raking up leaves in the fall, and if it was rainy, you had this pile of wet, slimy, gross leaves, and Dad would just bend over and reach in there with his hands and just pick them up. And that's how I like to do it to this day, just get it done. He wasn't afraid to get dirty. Something that will always be with me from Mom is virtually there was very few days of my years at home that I did not see her sitting reading her Bible. And, you know, her and Dad taught us that we needed to read our Bibles every day, but that memory is tremendously influencing on me of seeing mom just day after day, spending time in the Word. Let's go on and define example. To dig into a definition here, I want to illustrate to you. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to describe something to you, and you rate my description as to whether it was simple, easy to understand, and whether it was successful. In other words, you know what I'm talking about, okay? Simple or successful, and you just give me a quick rating when I'm done, if it was easy to understand and if you know what I'm talking about. So a 1 to a 5. Every day in our country, literally millions of pounds of food are carried from one location to another using a very well-designed device. This device is a simple structure of bars. The part that actually holds the food parcel, though, is made of just 3 or 4 strong, narrow bars. Opposite from these 3 or 4 bars is a large, strong, flat bar onto which a great variety of equipment can attach to operate this device. Okay, so give me a rating, 1 through 5. What would you say? Okay.
On simple or on...
Just as overall.
1.
Okay, a 1.
1 being the lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hard to understand. You didn't catch. Do any of you have an idea of what I was talking about? Don't say it if you do, but raise your hand if you have an idea of what I was describing to transport food. Okay, maybe. All right. So it was pretty cloudy, judging by 1 out of 4. 1 out of 4. Only 1 out of 4 have an idea of what I was talking about. But see, when I pull out an example of what I was talking about, a fork, it only takes one word and a visual. So that's the power of an example. Okay. An example is what is behind your great cloud of words. And if you can save those words and hold something in front of them, that's what an example is. Okay? In 5th grade, I had a teacher who read very well, and I don't ever remember him teaching us how to read. He just simply read well during story time. How many of you have read Thrilling Escapes by Night? Okay. What was the name of the deacon of the Church of the Blessed Virgin in that book? Do you remember? He was the one that was out hunting for William Tyndale and trying to catch him. His name was Cochleus. And in 5th grade, Steve Overholt, he'd be a brother to Brian, older brother, he was my teacher, he read that book to us. And he read, whenever he would say Cochleus's name, now pay attention here, I got the picture of this man who had long grasping fingers and evil searching eyes and perhaps even a pointed nose and never a smile. Okay, now do you know how Steve said that name? I described to you the picture that came to my mind, but do you know how he said it? Do you have any idea how he said it? Maybe. But see, if I tell you how he said it by example, Cochleus. Cochleus. Every time he would read that name, that's how he said it, and that's how the picture came to my mind. So you see the power of an example. So, I told you that an example is what's behind all the words. And if you can save words. So words paint beautiful ideals. Examples show them to be possible. Words touch your mind. Examples touch you. Words paint beautiful ideals. Examples show them to be possible. Words touch your mind, but examples touch you. So now let's complete this comparison here. Going on to point two, I am the example, okay? I am the fork. You are what the students look at day after day. They see beyond your words, they see beyond your dress, they see beyond your hands. By the end of the year, in the first couple days, they have an excellent idea about what kind of teacher you're going to be this year. 1 Timothy 4:12, our text verse, says, "Let no man despise thy youth, but be thou an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity." Now I see two things that this verse teaches us. The first one is what the answer to disrespect is. When Paul says to Timothy, don't let any man despise your youth, despise means think against or disesteem. Now, how are you going to prevent your students from disesteeming you or thinking against you or showing disrespect? Are you going to command them to not do that? I know of an instance where that was tried. The teacher commanded their respect verbally, and it may have made a difference. I'm not sure. But Paul gives, I believe, the answer to disrespect, and that is being a good example. When they look on and they see in your life honesty and just openness, they are not threatened in any way by some front that you're putting on. So, number one, the answer to disrespect. Let's see here. A good example is disrespect's answer. That's what I was wanting for that blank there. A good example is disrespect's answer. Okay, the second thing I see is the being. You know, we tell maybe an older child, now try to be a good example on the playground. Well, Paul doesn't say try to be a good example. It's commanded here. It's something that you are supposed to intentionally be. You're supposed to stand up there and dress in an intentional way. You're supposed to use your hands in an intentional way. You smile intentionally. You look at them intentionally. Everything is intentional. It's not that you're trying to act. It can so easily turn into an act to try to impress, but it's intentional. So modeling is intentional. Paul, writing to Titus, says, "In all things showing thyself a pattern of good works." So he was telling Titus basically to in front of people, show yourself. Don't act, don't put on a front, but show yourself. And I was impressed with that. We are supposed to show ourselves to our students. And of course, showing yourself is not a very big show. But if Christ is what is showing, that's where success is going to come. So, moving on here. Here's your takeaway from this class. The lesson is about Christ, and I am the example problem. So let's talk about example problems a little bit. When your students, when you are teaching a lesson and you have an example problem, what is the purpose of that example problem?
To show them how to do it.
Okay, to show them how to do it. So if they are going to learn how to do it, what are some characteristics that this example problem has to have? Let's say we're teaching direct objects, And the example sentence is, Bob is a boy. Okay? Is that a good example problem for teaching direct objects? Okay, why not? Point out at least one reason.
It has no direct object.
Okay, it has no direct object. Boy is a predicate nominative, and what kind of verb is that? Linking verb. Okay, that's not a good example. Be very confusing. But what if we have Bob hits balls fast? What's the direct object there?
Balls.
And hits is what kind of verb?
Action.
Okay, there we have a clear example. So, the lesson is about Christ, and you are the example problem. So, let's talk about what that lesson, what would we study when the lesson is about Christ? So we open our books and we turn to a lesson and it's about Jesus. Let's list some things that we are going to learn in that lesson. So we're going to study about Jesus here. What are we going to study in this lesson? Okay. Unselfishness. Now, only the children are unselfish, right? Teachers have gotten past the thing of having many needs and feeling grouchy. So unselfishness. Okay, what else do we see in Jesus' life?
Care for others.
Okay. Let's call that compassion. Do you always feel compassionate? What else?
Sacrifice.
Okay, what else? What about courage? Okay, another one?
Integrity.
Okay, let's fill in 6 and 7 yet.
He was a good example.
Okay. He was a good example. Never made mistakes, right? We'll talk about that a little bit more, dealing with our mistakes. Okay, one more. What is one more thing we see in the life of Jesus?
Self-discipline.
Okay. Now, you've reached the age of self-discipline, right? When it comes to studying after school and staying at your studies after school, you learned self-discipline before you became a teacher, and now you have it mastered, right? All right, so the lesson is about Jesus. This is what the students are supposed to learn. Before they dive into the lesson, they need an example problem to prepare them. They need to look at this example problem and see, okay, this here is going to help me understand this. Well, who is the example problem? It's you. So, when they look at you, is this what they're going to be prepared for? That was just extremely challenging to me to think of that. I look back on my years of teaching and the times I tried to impress, the times I tried to say things a certain way just to lift myself up as the teacher. It's just incredibly challenging and overwhelming, and I want to complete the picture here. We cannot be, it's impossible to be a perfect example of Christ, but yet, well, let's keep on going here. So the lesson is about Christ, and I am the example problem. Being a good example, it's not so much about who you are, it's about who. Okay, I'm sorry. It's not so much about who I am. It's about who I am following. And following Christ doesn't mean perfection, but it does mean completeness. Okay, so in this thing of perfection versus completeness, Christ was a perfect example. He didn't make mistakes. He handled everything in the way it should be handled, and that's impossible for you. But the man who tries to be perfect is under an incredible amount of bondage, because every time he makes a mistake or every time he encounters limitation, he doesn't know what to do with it. But the man who is forgiven by Christ, who has accepted himself and accepted his worth in God's eyes and understands that he does make mistakes and understands that Jesus is the answer to every mistake you make and everything that you think is out of place about yourself, Jesus is the answer for that. That's incredibly liberating. That's completeness. It's not perfection, but it's completeness. So now, all of a sudden, instead of needing to act a certain way to make up for some perceived weakness that I have, or needing to dress a certain way to make up for some perceived lack that I have, now I'm in the liberty to simply follow Christ. Christ gives me the liberty to deal with my imperfections in a healing, redemptive way. And trust me, your students, that's probably one of the things they need to see the most, because what do we face in this world? We face brokenness. We face the curse of sin all around us, and that's what Jesus is the answer for. So that's what they need to see in you. I don't know if any of you have read the book Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus. Is that a familiar book? It's a story of Nabil Qureshi. He was a Muslim, grew up in a very strong Muslim home, and came to Christianity. And Muslim, the religion of Islam, is a performance religion. It's based on performance. And in the end, God will weigh your good deeds against your bad deeds and reward you accordingly. And so they live under that baggage. And when he became a Christian, one of the things that just overwhelmed him was when he read, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." Because in his religion, it was, "Blessed are the righteous. Blessed are the righteous." But when he came to Christ, it was, "Blessed are those who are wanting, desiring to be righteous, searching for that, coming to Christ to be filled and not trying to perform on their own." So Jesus could say, "Follow me," but Paul had to say, "Follow me as I follow Christ." If all you're saying to your students is, "Follow me," and there is no Jesus coming through in your mistakes, in your smile, in your words, in your dress, it's going to be a failure. Jesus could say, "Follow me," but Paul had to say, "Follow me as I follow Christ." Okay, let's talk about hindrances to being Christ-like. What are some things that you face in letting Christ come through perfectly? So let's say I'm going to give you an example of a fork here. And I hold this up. Well, that's a little bit, it's missing two of its prongs. That's a little bit of hypocrisy going on there. If I tell you, now this is the example, the real deal. This is a fork. You've never seen one before. Well, that's not right. So when we stand before our students and we are wanting to be Christ-like, what are some things that we face that are going to make us a hypocrite as we stand in front of them? What are some challenges that you deal with? I'll start you off. One of them for me, and if you haven't taught yet, you're certainly going to find this, is lack of spending enough time in the Word. And I know you've heard this. We just heard it this morning, and some in their testimonies reference this as well. But lack of spending time in the Word, and you have to make time for that. You can't skip and skip and plan to be an effective teacher. It just won't work. Christ is the Word, and if you want to be Christ-like, you have to be into the Word. So that's one of mine that I continue to face even when I'm not teaching, is lack of immersion in the Word. What are some that come to your mind?
When you're somebody and thinking that you're way up here instead of on the level of the students.
Okay. Pride. All right. One of the things that pride automatically does is it blinds us to. It makes us extra vulnerable to get hurt because we suddenly are so blind to our own weaknesses. We think we're better than we actually are, and we start operating from that platform, and we're simply setting ourselves up to fall and to hurt other people. Okay, I can definitely relate to that one, pride. I heard a preacher put it this way, God resists, so there's the verse, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the lowly. So do you want God in front of you, pushing you back as you're teaching, or do you want him behind you, lifting you and helping you along? God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. There's nothing much more powerful than your student seeing you humble in all kinds of circumstances. When you aren't right, there will be times, if you haven't taught, where your students will be right and you won't be. And the best thing to do is just face the truth. Doesn't have to be embarrassing. It is sometimes, but it's part of being human. Okay? Anything else come to your mind? Hindrances to being Christ-like. Things that are going to smudge the picture of the students looking at you and seeing Christ.
Christ never made a mistake, so he didn't have to apologize or make things right. But I have found that extremely liberating, and not just in having to confess, oh, I don't know what a certain math fact is or who knows what, but in a character issue when you fail, to if you're not willing to confess it and talk to them about it, you just being a poor example of Christ. So being willing to humble yourself and confess it to them, ask for their forgiveness is very liberating.
Thank you. That's excellent. being willing to confess your faults. Confess your faults one to another that you may be healed. And sometimes the healing, it is for you, yes, but a lot of times there's a lot of healing that takes place in others as well when we are willing to open up about our own mistakes. Like I said, mistakes and the curse of sin is what your students are, that's what they're going to battle with the most in life. That's what they need to see you handle in a Christ-like way. Okay, anything else? Okay, let's go on to practical modeling. To cover a couple areas here. The big thing with practical modeling is, where are you taking your cues? And let's be honest, in this country and in our denomination, there is an incredible amount of variety, and there's an incredible amount of exposure to that variety of application of dress. There's enough affluence to accommodate lots of variety. So where are you taking your cues? In the way you act, the words you use, the way you dress, who are you looking at? And this just, you know, I'm 32, and I think about this so often. As a teenager, I remember especially the pressure of dressing a certain way. But as I get older, where I take my cues. So your appearance. Posture, your shoulders, your hands. I found it interesting looking into this thing of posture. Back about at the turn of the 20th century, 19th and 20th centuries, it became a popular thing to slouch. I'm not sure what all was behind that, but the thing of just slouching, it became a popular thing. And you look back in pictures, history before that time or other countries, the posture of Westerners, of Americans, is largely a very poor posture compared to other countries or an era prior to, especially the 1900s. So don't try to fit in with a certain crowd. Take a healthy pride in keeping your shoulders straight, in having good posture. It's definitely more it gives a more appealing appearance to your students. They will connect better with that. Your face. Is your face an honest face? Or is it a face that they can see that you're putting on a front? And I'm not sure how to describe that, but we know an honest face when we see one. I've already talked some about dress. And I'll just say this. I don't think God is as concerned about the variety in our dress as he is about who we are following, where we are taking our cues. Now, of course, your school board is probably going to have a policy and churches have policies, so I'm not discrediting that at all, but I think God is most concerned about where you're taking your cues. And if you're taking your cues from him, a lot of the variety things are going to fall into place where they should. Okay, demeanor. Again, in demeanor, honesty always at all cost. Love always at all cost. Dan brought up the verse yesterday about grace and truth. Truth being honesty, grace being love. Both of them at all costs in your demeanor. If you are sad about something, be honestly sad. I mean, we don't like being sad, but be honestly sad. Don't try to cover it. And if you're happy, be honestly happy. Honesty is extremely liberating. Also in your demeanor and how you relate to the variety in your students, it's going to be a temptation. You will connect better with some. It's going to be a temptation to treat them differently in very subtle ways. But honesty in the way you relate to all of them. Fairness. Your habits. I was really hit hard with this one. Sticking at my studying after school has always been a challenge for me. I get distracted easily, especially by what's outside. And the first day of school one year, I had a new student, and I was extremely amazed at the lack of motivation he had. He had homework on the first day of school. He just did not keep at it. And just all day, just it didn't seem rebellious. He just didn't seem to care too much. And so I was thinking, okay, how can I address this right away and, you know, let him know my expectations about that kind of action. So I was thinking about this after school and what to do, and God just used the example of that student. Students can be examples as well, to hit me with what are my expectations of myself in my studies after school? Are they the same as what I expect of them? So your habits, your words. Paul told Timothy in Titus 2, sound speech that cannot be condemned. For me, sound speech means less words. Sound speech that cannot be condemned is often closely, almost equivalent to less words. Your students look behind all your words and what your words try to make up for and what your flurry of noise is trying to make up for. They see you. So sometimes the fewer words, the better. One thing I'll say about words. Say what you mean and stop. Today, our culture today, there. This thing of watering down speech when you want to say what you mean, watering it down with all kinds of filler words. So, you know, would you students like come back to class and like open up your books and we'll like study science for a while? That's just rampant. And when I was teaching in Florida, I and my students, we decided to make each other accountable for filler words, like and especially. And it was an incredible challenge. Every time someone would say it, everybody would be listening. They just had sticky notes on their desk. They'd make a mark under that person's name. It was just incredible how loose we can be with our words. Okay, another thing about words. If you teach in grammar can versus may, say it that way. I don't use proper grammar all the time either, but this is one thing that I have heard teacher after teacher teach it one way and say it another way. And I have been guilty of that myself, and we just need to stop doing that. That crowd of people are the ones that get dictionaries changed. Okay, dictionary, the definitions of words actually change over time because an improper definition becomes used so commonly that it becomes a definition in the dictionary. Don't be one of those people. Practice what you teach. Okay, we're getting close to closing time here. I'm going to open it up for a bit on any of these practical modeling or anything we've covered so far. Is there a question or something you want to add? One other thing with words. When you tell them to stand for prayer or come back to a class, don't say, if you all could come back for class now, or if you all could stand for prayer, please. Forget that little if. Just say, stand for prayer, please. Come back to class, please. If you all could open your books, no, just open your books, please. Or, Dorvin, if you could put your pencil away, or if you could stop messing with your pencil. Don't use that little if. Just say exactly what you mean in a gentle, definite way. Well, let's go on and conclude.
sorry, the question and answer period would be at 10:45.
Okay, thank you. Well, that opens the window up a little bit more. I'll give you a little more time if you wanted to share something or ask a question. I'm going to back up to this thing of how do we handle our mistakes and being okay with making mistakes. That's part of being a good example. If you look at point three, letter C, my wife informed me that habits is spelled wrong. And I was threatening to change that, and she said, well, you can use that as an example. I said, well, but this class is supposed to be about being a good example, and there's a misspelling. Well, so how do you handle those mistakes? Well, the first thing that came to my mind was, well, I have to swallow my pride and be okay with displaying my spelling error to the whole class and admitting it. But how do we move beyond the perceptions we have about ourselves that are true or false, and the things that are actually true, our failures in front of our students, the things that we struggle with on an ongoing basis? There's a verse in Hebrews 13, and I'm not sure the verse itself, but it's somewhat of a benediction. The writer says, now the God of peace that brought again from the dead our Lord Jesus, that great shepherd of the sheep, through the blood of the everlasting covenant, make you perfect. He doesn't say it's up to you to make yourself perfect. It says this God make you perfect unto every good work. And then this is the part that is, it's just, it describes God's divine enablement. It says working in you that which is well pleasing in his sight. So sometimes we try so hard and we get stuck on the performance thing, the works thing, and I've got to try harder. But that tells us that God wants to work in us what is well-pleasing in his sight. And this morning, Brother Jay talked about Christians have the divine power to conquer things that need to be conquered, the things of the world. So God wants to enable you. And that's a journey of how, it is a journey to learn how to let him do that. But he wants to work in you what is well-pleasing in his sight. And that's what you want your students to see. Well, let's go ahead and conclude.
Take one of each. She would have some too.
Okay, so I've given you some cheese cubes. You have cheddar and pepper jack. And up here I have cheddar. Sometimes you go into Costco or Winco and there's a person at the end of the aisle doing this type of thing. What's the purpose of that? What's the purpose of a sample?
To get you to buy something.
Okay, to get you to buy something. To get you to buy it, though, they want you to what first?
Taste it, see how good it is.
Okay, they want you to experience the product first, okay? So, to finish up here, your most important work is to be a Christ sample. This represents Christ. This is you. Okay? That's your most important work. Not to try so hard to be a certain thing, but to let Christ be through you. So say it with me. My most important work is to be a Christ sample. One more time. My most important work is to be a Christ sample. Now, I gave some of you, well, you each have a Pepper Jack one too. Sometimes that's what we do to our students. We're supposed to be modeling cheddar, and we have that bite of Pepper Jack. That might be a little hypocrisy. It might be just anything that gets in the way of Christ shining through. So God bless you as you look at Christ and let Him love through you, let Him smile through you, let Him dress through you, let Him run and play through you, let Him talk through you. Let Him do everything through you, not I, but Christ.